You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello, my name is Mariana Sanchez-Morera, Thought Leadership Director at Chemical Market Analytics under Dow Jones Energy. And with me today is Ana Lopez, our Executive Director, Americas Chloralkali and Vinyls. Welcome, Ana.
Hello, Mariana. Good morning.
So just to give a little bit of a background to our listeners, global PVC markets, they have been less directly affected by the ongoing conflict in the Middle East than other major chemical value chains. That doesn't mean they have been completely unaffected. There have been indirect impacts, as have been pretty much for all supply chains within chemicals and beyond chemicals. And all chemical markets are undergoing transitional and structural changes in one form or another. And today, Ana and I will be diving into some of the major market drivers affecting global PVC markets. So, Ana, I think we need to start with the Middle Eastern conflict. We just saw re-escalation of the conflict at the time of recording this podcast. So, the impact of the conflict, it differs by region and by production process. I'd assume that, for instance, Chinese carbide-based producers would be facing stabler costs than others more exposed to oil and derivatives. Those would be feeling the global pinch derived from the Middle East crisis. So perhaps you could expand on these regional and technology differences in the current scenario.
Well, in the case of PVC, this crisis in the Middle East has impacted mostly three regions, I would say. First, Northeast Asia, Southeast Asia, and also the European region. And these three regions have economics or production economics for PVC that largely depend on naphtha feedstock for their ethylene production. Then producers in mainland China are a little bit divided because you have two available process technologies to produce PVC. On one hand, you still have the ethylene-based PVC process, which is used for a portion of their PVC production. But you also have the carbide-based producers, which are the majority of the capacity in mainland China. So for them, for the carbide-based producers, yes, the economics were not impacted by the volatility in the crude oil prices. They have been able to raise operating rates and come to the market to try to fill the void of other production that has had to reduce rates because of the high prices for the feedstocks and volatility.
It's quite interesting in your list of regions most affected, you left out North America, I noticed. And that actually brings me to my next question, which is, I read in a report of yours that March had already a flurry of activity in the U.S. Gulf Coast. I know that traders anticipated the shortage developing in the Asian markets that you just mentioned because of the Middle Eastern feedstocks. So were there any limitations to North American producer gains? They clearly gained, right, compared to everyone else especially. And how about domestic prices? Did these follow the strong increases of export markets?
I think you make a great point, Mariana, because the regions that I mentioned with impacts, I think, are the negative impacts, right? So that's what comes to mind first. But for North America, I think it was a positive impact because they were able to export more, of course, to try to also help in that void of product that the market was at, especially during March and April, that the market was a little bit more short. If we think about March, PVC producers were able to export over 300,000 metric tons of PVC. So it was higher than the previous month. I don't have the figures for April with me right now, but I think they also were able to export a little bit more, no, to support the global markets. There were some turnarounds, so maybe that also prevented in part to see that maybe like not huge, but bigger wave of U.S. products. So there were some turnarounds. But yes, export prices increased, especially during March and April. And those had also an impact on domestic prices. So as export prices went up, domestic prices also strengthened. But it was not only because the export dynamics, I think it was also due to seasonality here in the domestic market. Usually that beginning of the second quarter is when domestic PVC demand strengthens traditionally. So yes, it was a combination.
I think we also need to touch a little bit on the market after the crisis, right? Obviously, the crisis is impacting the short term, and it's probably going to impact the outlook beyond its conclusion. It was already my understanding before all of this that the global PVC industry was entering a period of suppressed margins, oversupply, the utilization rates expected to hit a floor through 2027. Then you have India emerging as a major capacity hub, and even with rationalization, especially in Europe, I think our outlook for all of this was a return to healthy operating rates and likely before 2030. So really, we're looking at a long bottom cycle. And I wanted to understand how this longer term outlook correlates with the short term supply disruptions that we've just discussed. Is the market tight right now? If so, will a global oversupply position resume once the normal Middle East flows are reestablished, or maybe even before then? How are these dynamics influencing the price movements, supply-demand dynamics in the short term, and how is it impacting our
people? You make a great point. The global PVC market has already seen some adjustments. First, you have the crisis in the Middle East and the supply shock more than a demand shock, like what COVID-19 pandemic brought to the market. So this is a kind of like a different situation, meaning that demand for the most part did not change, no, during these beginning of the or the onset of the crisis, no, during March and April. So demand was mostly stable. And then supply changed. And this, I think, is kind of like a transitory event. And that's what we're expecting it to be, that it will now kind of like improve. So after the disruption now, we hope that it gets improved. So our team, the team at Chemical Market Analytics, thinks that the long-term outlook for the global PVC market remains unchanged, as a structurally there is more supply capacity than demand at this point, where there have been a few curtailments in Europe and North America. And yes, the global market continues in an oversupply. So we are seeing some adjustments, more like structural adjustments for the PVC market. I think most of these, at least to date, have happened in Europe. And we'll see. I hope that demand starts to grow so that we can have a much better balance.
Just to conclude our conversation, I want to go back to mainland China and to go back to coal-based production. As you already mentioned that, you know, because coal prices were stabler during this whole crisis, they actually managed to reap quite a bit of profit in filling some of the gaps of other production. So I wanted to understand, beyond the current crisis, what are the prospects of growth for coal to PVC? Also, it's worth noting that I saw this plan for building a new type energy system during the 15th five-year plan period, right, through to 2030. And that the Chinese government actually highlights the potential role of coal in the context of energy security. In terms of supply security, this was already proven to be an important part of the supply chain. But also within the context of the energy transition, specifically mentioning coal to chemicals. So I thought this was an interesting change of direction, at least the direction on paper. And carbide-based PVC falls under this category. So do you foresee an impact of the plan and the current landscape, the technology of choice in the upcoming investment cycle?
Everything has a little bit of black and white, right? So it's not as straightforward as it seems. The carbide-based PVC process has stopped receiving approvals for building new plants some time ago. And mainly it's due to concerns about the catalyst that it's being used. So what I understand is that now all the new PVC plants built in mainland China are ethylene-based. So now the coal-to-chemicals process technology that you mentioned, I think maybe the pathway is first go like coal-to-olefins, where you produce the ethylene, and then you use that ethylene into the plants, the PVC plants that are already built. I think in this case, during the Global Plastic Summit, so we will have our executive director, Eddie Kwok, and he will be able to give us a little bit more detail about this, especially for China, so his view. But I think there's another thing that we have to consider is that demand for PVC, we know that it's related very well with the construction industry. So I think it's good that there's some potential infrastructure construction, say, for these coal to chemicals and some of these, as you mentioned, some of the development in China. But I think the main demand segment for PVC would be construction. So let's see.
Well, thank you so much, Anna, for joining me today and for sharing your insights and your expertise. There's certainly a lot more that can be said about every single one of these themes and their impact to PVC markets. And Anna will be presenting about America's PVC markets and how the current landscape influences pricing, producer profitability, and regional demand short-term outlooks in our upcoming Global Plastic Summit in Houston, Texas, from the 2nd to the 4th of November. So I'd like to invite our listeners to continue the conversation and be part of the discussion shaping the future of the industry, joining Anna, GPS. You can register now at chemicalmarketanalytics.com/GPS. And by using promo code PPOD15, you will receive an additional 15% discount on your registration. So thank you again, Anna, and thank you for tuning in.
Thank you, Mariana. Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.